Do you think there was an ethical breach here, that the governor did something wrong? And do you agree with that finding, or do you disagree with that finding? Or by inaction did something wrong?
That's a toughie, because if you just look at the at what was released to the public, then you have to say, yeah, from if you just have that information. But when you have all the information, then you think, ooh, boy, there was good reason for a lot of that. So, and we can't, that's ridiculous. We can't talk about it, you know. And so it sounds like we're giving everybody the runaround, but we were cautioned very carefully about what we could talk about and what we can't. And so it's really difficult to question people about this, because we have to really think hard what part we can say, yeah, this happened, and what part we can't even talk about.
In a related question, not the investigation, but do you have any concerns about Governor Sarah Palin's candidacy affecting her ability to do state business? And I guess the main question here is, if she returns to Alaska, if she doesn't end up getting elected as vice president, along with John McCain as president, are you concerned with a breakdown in relationships between the governor and legislators that were relatively strong before she hit the campaign trail, but as we both know, have been strained partially because of the investigation, but also because of national politics in a lot of ways as well, and how the McCain campaign has been conducted and so on?
No, I'm not. I think that strained relationships happen because people don't get together, and I think that after all of this, I think there will be a better getting together.
Even in Ketchikan, where the mayor had some strong thoughts and feelings about the governor and has come out in opposition?
Well, they're going to have to realize that they, you know, you don't, what is the saying, you don't kill the goose that lays the egg, or something like that, you know, that type of thing. Because, you know, if she comes back and she's our governor, then we work with what we have. And we all do that. And if you do it in a nasty way, you aren't going to get good good communications, and you're going to have some resistance. And so I think everyone needs to step back and look at things. And the biggest thing that I'm concerned about is the fact that we passed a bill this past session, and the bill, and it's a fiscal policy bill, and the bill says that that the governor, by the time we come back to Juneau, that she or he, whoever, will have a fiscal plan, a short-term plan, and a long-term plan, and that will be in place, and she will be able to present it to us from each department. And I assume that those deep things are being worked on now, even though she's not here, although I don't know that. But I'm assuming that all that kind of thing is being worked on now as we speak. But I think it'll be probably difficult for her just to get back and to get on the bandwagon and get caught up a little bit. But it's not any different than any other. It happens every 4 years. And there's campaigning for president, and there's always only one side that wins. And so the other side has to go back to what they were doing. And so I think that, and there have been governors that have had to go back to their districts or to their states and start in again. And so one thing, I think she's very smart, and she's also, I think she's a quick learner. And so I don't, you know, it'll be interesting. We'll have to just wait and see how it turns out. But she's perfectly capable of doing it, I think.
And you think she'll still be able to work with Republicans and Democrats who she's been in conflict with over the investigation issue?
That remains. I don't know. You know, we'll have to just wait and see.
Okay. Another question is, if the governor does get elected, if the McCain ticket does get elected to the presidency, what are your thoughts about Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell taking over the reins of the executive branch in Alaska?
Well, I like Sean a lot. I got to know him during the campaign, just a little bit, when they were campaigning in the primary. And this has been a while ago, but I remember distinctly at a tea, and I sat at the head table, and Sean sat right next to me. And I really wanted to ask Sarah lots of questions, but I couldn't get that close to her, so he was sitting beside me. And so we talked that whole time. And one of the questions I asked him is, I said, what about Southeast and moving the capital? And he said to me, well, I'll tell you what, he says, the whole time I was in the legislature, whenever that came up, I never voted for moving the capital. I know how important it is and how that would economically affect Southeast, and I wouldn't ever vote for that to happen. And so I keep thinking about that, and I'm, you know, so I think we would like him, and I think he would do a good job for us.
The State Department of Transportation has been pushing a road to Cake to go along with a planned electrical transmission line. As we both know, Cake's long lobbied to get electrical transmission line. The state is saying basically that it could do it cheaper, assuming that there's a road built at some point, I guess, is the idea that the state is saying it could do it cheaper if it built the road now with the transmission line somewhere in the neighborhood of $170 million, whereas if they just did the intertie, it could be between $47 and $65 million. Should the state be pursuing the road project, and if so, where's that money going to come from?
Well, that's the big question, where the money is going to come from, and I don't know that yet at this point in time. However, I do know that anytime they do a project like that, if they can have a road right beside it, when it comes, not initially, but in the long run, anytime they have to do any kind of maintenance on that line, the fact that there's a road there, they don't have to fly in a helicopter, those are tight. They save tons of money. So I do know that in the long run, over many years, that they do save lots of money that way. Because if not, when you're up on those, just look at what's happening with the intertie between Ketchikan and us. They're on hillsides that they can't even work there unless they use helicopters. And so it's going to take lots of maintenance. And when they're brand new, you don't have that much maintenance. But as they get older, and you still have to shut things down and maintain them over a certain period of time. And if you'd, like with Petersburg and Wrangell, we know that there's a certain period of time that we shut them down in the summertime, and they do that work. But if there was a road right beside it, it wouldn't have to be shut down that long.
But as far as the road goes, do you think the state needs to be pursuing the expense of an actual road that would be a transit for people to go between the two communities, or would you prefer to see them just build an intertie along existing logging roads and have a maintenance road, but not spend the money to build the road like they're talking about, which is on the northern shore of Kuprinoff Island?
Well, what I tend to do is try to figure out what the communities want and how the communities feel about it, and because that's really a local issue in between Cake and Petersburg, and so I kind of like to wait and see where they come out with it, and then if it's something that they want, then I would go ahead and push it. But I really don't know for sure. I know Cake for a long time was totally against a road, but I think they have changed their mind.
Well, and the city council there has passed a resolution in support of what the state is proposing, essentially a road and a intertie. Petersburg City Council hasn't taken action, but there's some mix of opinion on there, but there I would say a majority more recently expressed concerns and were not real confident. In fact, we're not confident at all that the money would ever come through for a road, that they worried that it would delay the electrical intertie, or a lot of them did anyway. There were a couple of councilors who thought that was a good idea. But, you know, where would you come at it from that perspective? Would that be a concern for you as well, that trying to build a drivable road could potentially and get that hundreds of million or over $100 million more could delay the needed power line, I guess, is the main concern, I think, for folks.
Well, I don't think that probably would be time delaying as you think, because of the fact that right now we do have an excess in funds. And so if we're going to do
The state does, not the federal government.
Oh,
right?
No. Yeah, the state. If we're going, but we do have, and last time when we had, when we were in this big boom and the oil fields were pumping down the oil pipeline and everything, and we had lots of money, they didn't do infrastructure. And that's the time to do infrastructure, when you have extra money. Now, I'm not sure if this is the right place to put it, but I do know that we have to take into consideration, too, Kuprinov is not happy about that, and they would like to see a different route. So I think that there's some things that need to be looked at first before we just say, oh, yes, let's go for it, you know. So I haven't made a decision yet, because I think there's some concerns that I do have. And we do need to look at our infrastructure, and now is the time to use it when we've got the money.
Southeast towns recently just caught a break because of the reauthorization of the Federal Secure Rural Schools Act for 4 years. And that means a lot of money. And actually, the money's going to be increased to something around $19 million for Southeast Alaska. However, as we know, the federal government, looking into the future, the outlook isn't so great in terms of money. And 4 years from now, it could have the same problems or worse and might not be renewed. Do you believe the state should step forward and fill that gap for Southeast schools? And is that something you're going to start working on, or willing to start working on now, to try and come up with a solution so that 4 years down the line, this Southeast schools aren't freaking out, so to speak, that these communities are each going to lose $1 million or more or less, depending on the town?
Well, I think the schools need to realize that the reason they got 4 years was so that they could slowly kind of phase it out. But also, the money that part of the reason that we didn't get our numbers that weren't more up for the cost differential was because we were getting those.
For the state funding.
Yes, for the state funding. And so now that we're starting slowly, by the time 4 years are up, we will be up to our full amount that we should be getting from the state for school funding. And it will be pretty much exactly what it has been in the past. Now, because they're going to be getting a little extra than what they had before, because the formula is different, it probably won't make it up to what their increase is, but it definitely will pretty much break even for what it has been in the past. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't have more funding. I think we need to look at, I think that in the near future, and when I say the near future, I mean probably 4 years, we are going to have to increase funding for schools a tremendous amount, because the baby boomers are starting to retire, and we are going to have such a shortage of school teachers that there is no way we won't have enough in Alaska to do it. And they're going to be in the same boat in the lower 48, and we will not be able to get teachers up here at all, unless it's like it used to be. There's a big difference between the lower 48 and Alaska. And so legislators are going to have to say, there's only one way to fix this. And if we raise the income so that, you know, any time that there is a shortage of some area, that's the best thing to do, is raise their base pay, so that people will say, well, golly, I've always kind of wanted to go to Alaska to live. But they can't do that unless they're going to be making more than they made in the lower 48. So I think that that's going to have to be an increase of funds in a lot of ways, especially in areas where in areas like we are in, because of the fact that we've got small numbers in our schools compared to, you know, the lower 48 or the rail belt. And we're going to have to make adjustments. We're going to have to try to have still provide the same services. Well, actually, I don't want to stop in midstream here, but we're going to have to change the way we run schools. We are going to have to make some changes. And there is such a thing as P16. And P16 is a new kind of a new thought process of ways to run schools, and they're starting to do it in the lower 48, and I'm excited about it, and if I have anything to say about it, we'll start to do it here in Alaska.
What is it?
P16 is the, you know, right now we say K-12. Well, we're just extending that. P is preschool, and 16 means you go further than just 12th grade. And so P16 means that you try to have a continuum, and you start looking at a early age what kids are good at and what they like to do, and try to make, especially when they're in high school, try to make a good reason for them to take subjects. In other words, you know, right now they just have to get so many credits so they can get out of high school. Well, that's not too exciting. So I have to take this class because, you know, it's given me so many credits, blah, blah, blah. Well, if we are showing kids and counseling kids so that we know exactly what are they good at? What are their likes and dislikes? Are they going to want a job that's an outside job, that they're outside a lot, or are they an inside person? Do they want a desk job? Do they want a job, you know, whatever? And sit down with the kids and say, what would you like? Now, a lot of them won't know, but if we can test them and see what they're good at and what is their normal abilities that are everybody has abilities in some way or another that are better than somebody else's. And if we look at that and then say to them, okay, here's what we have to do to help you get there. Just think the difference that'll make for a high schooler if they have to take the math and they realize the reason they have to take the math is because when they get out, they're going to be doing something they want to do. Right now, kids don't even know why they take a math class because it says that I have to have so many math classes. That's it. You know, and so if we can help them be excited about something that they want to do, they will be more interested. And anyway, that's kind of the general idea of it all. And of course, I'm saying that in a very broad way, but there's all kinds of things that we can do to help them be excited about something. And because of our dropout rate, we're thinking that this will help kids so that they're not so much in an area where they think there's no hope, they'll never get a job. You know, they live in this town and there's no jobs available anyway. And so many kids drop out. And we're very fortunate on like Wrangell, Petersburg, and Sitka. Our dropout rates aren't as bad as many of the other areas are in the state, but this will help. And so we have to go to ways of doing things that are proven and that we know work. And this is one area where they are proving that it works, and we need to start looking at things that are going to work, and it's going to be helping our kids.
Are you planning on chairing Hess again? Are you hoping to chair Hess again? Or you don't know what your assignments will be? Or?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think I'm going to try for a leadership position.
Appropriations?
I would like to be on Ways and Means,
an actual like House majority leader kind
of. Well, actually, what I think I would run for if I'm going to try to run for it is whip. And
describe what whip does. Everyone always hears the word the whip, the majority whip. What does a whip do?
Well, we have not had a whip. We've had a kind of an honorary whip, and so it's been the same person over the years, but that person has had the title, but it's never, nothing's ever been done. And so I have been in a state where we had a whip, and I know what a whip does, and so I think we need one. And so I'm going to try for that position, and what that person does is kind of whip people into shape, and there will be goals, and goals what the legislature can accomplish. We will have long-term goals and short-term goals. We will, instead of saying, "My man, I want this money, and they got it over there, so I'm going to try to get it away from them so I can have it in my district," you look at it and you say, we can partner up. What do you need and what do I need? And let's see if we can work it out together. So it's a different way of running the legislature, and I think it's time that we start doing things like that.
I believe you had a chance this last legislative session to serve on the Appropriations Committee, and yet you chose to stay as chair of HES. I don't know if you could have done both. I don't think you could have done both. But
I couldn't have.
Why did you choose to Appropriations is often seen as one of the most powerful positions because you're holding the purse strings of the government, essentially.
Yeah, and actually, it's we call it in Alaska finance.
Finance committee,
yeah.
Sure.
And but in most states, there's two committees. There's the finance committee and there's the appropriations committee. And Alaska, the reason people think it's pretty powerful is because it actually is pretty powerful. But the people that are on finance committee, it's the chairman that are the powerful ones. The rest of them kind of have to go with the flow a little bit. And
but you only get to be chair if you're actually serving on it at some point. So
yes.
Well,
yes.
How come you chose not to do it?
It's pretty hard for someone in Southeast to be chair. I remember the first year that I was elected when Bill Williams was co-chair of finance. And the only reason he got on at the time was...
Bill Williams of Saxman.
Yes,
oh, sorry.
Yeah. And the reason he got on is because the chairman of the general budget thought he could control him. And so at that time, just because of the way people do things, and that you have to have so many votes to get in different positions and everything, and he needed his vote. And so Bill ended up doing a real good job. And he ended up, after he learned the ropes, he ended up pulling his own weight and doing pretty good for his district and for Southeast Alaska. And so if you're chairman, that's wonderful. It's very difficult for somebody in Southeast to become chairman and because of the numbers. There are 26 members of the House that are on that live in the Rail Belt area. Actually, probably more than that, but between Matsu and Anchorage, there's 26. So they aren't going to want somebody from Southeast to be a chairman.
So is Southeast, is the House then more, I don't know if you will, you call it anti-Southeast than the Senate? Because obviously we know Bert Stedman, our senator, is co-chair of Senate Finance,
mm-hmm.
correct?
And I hope he gets that position again, because that is a big plus
and
for
And he was
us.
A fairly new legislator, too. It wasn't like he'd been there for 10 years.
That's right. But you have to remember, in the House, or in the Senate is totally different from the House. There's only 20 people. And in order to have a majority, you only need 10. And but like this last time, probably he wouldn't have been if he wouldn't have went with the coalition. And who knows what's going to happen next time. I hope that he gets it, because it was wonderful, because he could put things in, or else I could put things in, and he could watch mine over there, and I could watch his in the House side, and that was wonderful. But I don't know what's going to happen this go-around. It'll be totally different. This is going to be a different year than it has been in the past.
In terms of health care, do you believe that it's a right that should be provided by government, something the government does for the people who support that government with their taxes, whatever else, or should it remain a privately provided commodity? Do you think ultimately this country, or at least this state, because there are states that do this, should be pushing towards trying to provide health care services, some sort of universal health yeah. insurance?
Well, you can count on one hand the number of states that do it. They are having problems trying to keep it going. I kind of would like to see if it can be successful for a few years. I don't think there's any program that's more than 2 years old. In the states that have it, they have both a sales tax and an income tax, and so the people of the state actually pay taxes. And if the people of the state pay taxes, then maybe there's more of a responsibility for the state to turn around and provide more services. But the people of this state don't pay taxes. They, you know, businesses do, but
only at the local level, basically.
Yeah,
property
yeah.
And sales and
they,
so on.
Yeah, they pay taxes.
And not even every community does that.
But. Right, and anyway, so that's kind of hard for me, because of the fact that our state does so much for the people of the state already, and if they could do what they're talking about at the federal level, I would go right along with it and say that's great. But
which one, Obama or McCain?
Well, they're both saying something, so you know, whichever it turns out.
You'd like to see more people insured or covered.
Yes, but actually, in Alaska, on our committee, on the Hess committee, we actually did a study on that and found out that insurance isn't the issue in Alaska as much as it is access. And if people could have access, because no one's turned away, you know, so if you absolutely have to have care, everybody gets it, unless they can't get somewhere. And so access is more important to the people of the state than insurance is. But, you know, it's devastating not to have insurance. So that's a really toughie when the people don't pay, but they want us to give them everything. And so I'm kind of torn, and I haven't made up my mind for sure on that. As a state, I don't know how we would be able to do it and do it in a sustained way without having put something into place. We couldn't do it now. We might be able to do it with the extra money we have right now, but down the line when the oil runs we're pretty close on not having enough oil in the pipeline now, and that drops by 6 to 10% every year. So we all know what happens when we took away the benefit from the seniors. I mean, it was a tragedy, and because people were depending on it. And so we have to be very careful what we do. And if we do something, we want to make sure that we can sustain it. And that's the biggest thing right now, is looking into the future to see if we can sustain it. And right now, without a gas pipeline, we can't. And so that's, you know, if we had the money coming in and knew that there was going to be a steady stream of money, but until we have a gas pipeline, we know that won't happen. And so as things are away now, I'd say we just can't afford it because we can't sustain it.